Autism spectrum disorders are a much discussed topic in child psychiatry, psychology, and developmental pediatrics, particularly as community awareness has increased and incidence rates continue to rise. The CD reports just this month that nearly 1 in 68 children has a diagnosis of autism spectrum disorder, but it's still widely misunderstood by society, the media, and even the science community. Researchers don't know what causes the disorder. As we'll hear today, the most accepted treatment options are rooted in behavioral therapy and education. Some therapy is more effective than others, but treatment is as unique as the individuals themselves. In this show, we'll walk you through a few local programs and make a point to listen to the very end. You'll hear a kid with autism use what he calls his real voice to share his story. And that voice doesn't come from a human voice box. In this first segment, we're going to hear from Kim Dirk, the CEO of Lifesong Academy. The school is based on the Applied Behavioral Analysis, or ABA, practice, which is the most commonly used therapy for autism. And Kim, you opened up this school. It was not really along the lines of your career trajectory. You'd been working in the corporate world, but something caught your attention that made you want to move into this field. What happened?
Yeah, so when we adopted a total of 6 children from Hungary, and they came out of an orphanage over there, and when they had been home for a period of time, we became really aware of the fact that they had issues that were broader than just the international adoption types of things, and the fact that they spoke one language, we spoke another, and things like that. And so we ended up eventually accumulating quite a few diagnoses of autism. And what we found, though, in our area, we were not able to find the services that they really needed to be able to help them go from being as what would be considered pretty chronically disabled to what really was their potential for independence. And so the trick was we had to figure out how to get those services in our area so we didn't have to move.
And when you say our area, you're talking about Evansville.
Yeah, the Evansville region actually was where mm-hmm. we were finding that there was some great services around speech, OT, and special education. Educators have the deepest heart. Mm-hmm. And we also had some good doctors on our team, but that still wasn't sufficient, even though that was the normal prescription. So what we were needing was when we started looking and saying, well, what would our children get if they lived somewhere other than Evansville, mm-hmm. someplace that did have these kind of services. It was applied behavior analysis and in tandem with, you know, some of these other complementary therapies. But what we found was that if I took some of the learnings, ironically, that I had already been doing for the past decade over in the corporate world in organizational behavior management, about breaking things down into small bites and learning how to really reinforce people for doing the kind of best work that they totally could do. And I started applying those to something called applied behavior analysis, which is the science of behavior in very incremental, reinforcing bites.
It's also known as ABA.
It is, right? ABA.
And that's the scientifically backed treatment for autism.
Yeah, and that's what they're saying, it's the most evidence-supported treatment. It doesn't mean that there won't be some day later some other ways of doing this a little bit faster, but at this mm-hmm. point, this is the best we know to be able to really find out what each individual child needs, because whether you're talking regardless of age, what we really have to look at is what is working for the individual and what isn't, and then training up the pieces that would have developed normally and didn't.
Mm-hmm. Well, as you know, I went and visited your school yeah. to see how you use ABA therapy and kind of your approaches. And one of the things that struck me was the cards that kids have, you know, with on a carabiner latched mm-hmm. onto their belt loop. What's going on there? What's that?
So you're describing something called the APEX system, which is a picture exchange communication system, which is actually a very systematic way of substituting visual images for language that normally mm-hmm. people would have coming out of their mouth. And so it's not the only way of going after training people who don't developed speech in the norm, you know, more traditional way, but it is one of the ways that tends to be very helpful. And so what the kids do is they actually have an image of, let's say that they're interested in juice. And so we'll have a picture of specifically the juice that they're interested in, their very favorite, and we'll put that in on a little bitty, maybe a 1 by 1 inch picture, mm-hmm. and we'll Velcro that to a larger piece of paper And then that will then substitute for the child's voice. And we're actually able to teach them very quickly by if they hand us that picture of juice, then they will get what they're looking for, which is juice. Now, a lot of times what we want to do is phase out the PEC system as soon as possible mm-hmm. to something that is more convenient for them and is always with them, such as their fingers or ideally their voice. Because the problem with using PEC system or any kind of a substitute like that, like a iPad or something substituting for a voice, is if the child lays it down and goes into the other room. They're very much like Ariel when she landed on the beach. She had was able to walk, but she wasn't able to speak anymore. And we don't want to ever leave a child without their voice.
Hmm. Are you seeing that through this program that people are, or kids are getting their voice back?
Yeah, they're actually able to get it for the first time. And so the beautiful thing that's happening in, that we have had a number of kids that have came through that by many, many very well-intentioned and very expert opinions, given the information that they have, they say, you're going to have to accept the fact that your child is not going to talk. But that's okay. They'll live a very fulfilling life. And it is true that you don't have to talk to live a fulfilling life. That is absolutely true. However, it's also true that many of the children that had that kind of prognosis in the past can indeed learn how to talk. Not all of them, and it's important people understand that. But for the most part, we're going to be able to get even very severely profound impacted individuals to be able to communicate at least at a rudimentary level, if not at a very involved and very complicated level that is going to, allow them a level of independence and mm-hmm. holding a job and all that kind of thing down the road. And until you start working with that child, you never know. Because I've seen some kids where everybody was just like, this is never going to happen. And now, I'm thinking of one child in particular in our region where that was what everybody was saying, and he's now in developmental kindergarten.
Oh, wow.
And that was after he had started getting intensive therapy for about 3 years total.
Well, that's the thing about autism that I think couldn't be emphasized enough is that every case is so unique. And, one example from my visit with you was each room is a sensory experience. And there's one classroom that was dark with a black light. And you said there's a student who could read in that room, just that room.
Yes. Yeah. It was really fascinating because we actually didn't know he could read. In fact, we believed he couldn't. And so, we had worked with him on a lot of other things, and he was showing high intelligence, a high cognitive ability in areas, but some of the basic fundamental academics looked like they weren't available to him. Hmm. And so once we started getting him more comfortable, he had high anxiety. And by the time we started getting him more comfortable and he started to trust, I think, the environment as well as the people he was working with at a level that he could relax and be accepted for who he was and what he chose to do and how we could get some things, then we ended up taking him down there and happened to just, we always are giving probes and trying to give some sort of an exposure to the opportunity. Mm-hmm. And it was at that point then he just started picking up a book, and he not only could read, he could read quite well. But it was in a dark room with purple fluorescent lights, and it wasn't until we were able to fade him out of that transition and, move him into another rooms. And now you would never know he had initially presented as having the inability to read.
Support comes in part from Evansville Day School, partnering with parents to offer a student-centered education program for students junior pre-kindergarten through 12th grade. More information at evansvilledayschool.org or at 812-476-3039. Stay tuned for more of the Trends 2-week look into autism spectrum disorder. We'll be back with Cass Harrington in just a moment.
Is that kind of your framework for, do children have to prove their competence? Do they have to move up or move? I don't know what kind of system you have for showing, okay, they can go into a normal classroom.
Yeah.
But do they have to demonstrate that, okay, I can read or I can learn. What does it look like?
Yeah, so what we, you know, the beautiful thing about the ABA framework, and it needs to be understood, it's not like, oh, this is ABA. Instead, it's a framework of how you look at each individual and you kind of look at what your targets would be. What would you expect them to do based on their age and their what you would expect their peers to be doing and things like that. And then you kind of look at and see what they're really doing. Mm-hmm. And there may be a delta there and there may not be. And depending, and many times what we find is with children with autism, you'll find deltas in the areas of language and communications. I mean, deficits, I should say, in the areas of language and communications and social specifically of areas. But then you'll find these amazing, like, just bursts of what most people would just consider gifted capabilities, and especially in the areas of things like visual spatial capabilities, being able to tell where they are in the world compared to other things. You know, they don't get lost very easily, or they may be able to, you know, build things and do all those kind of things. So instead of deciding what they can't do, we always just assume that they can, but we haven't figured out how to get to them yet. Then eventually you're going to get to a place that, you know, when you're starting to work with them, and you have to look at, okay, is this a child that is ready to go into a typical classroom, for instance? Then what you would do is you would, make sure that they are going to be able to get along socially with the other. And I don't mean necessarily out on the playground, but I'm talking about so they don't have temper tantrums in front of everyone that's going to be really bad for them or hurt someone or hurt themselves or something like that. And if you can kind of work all that together, then you work with a team that starts with the parents, ideally, or their primary caregivers, the medical community, the education community, and as a team, you collaboratively decide if this child's ready to transition into classroom, given their skills that they have.
So it's judgment based on what?
On their skill demonstration.
Okay. Yeah. What kind of skills? What are the indications you look for specifically to say, okay, this child is progressing, time to put him or her into a classroom?
So the way we really look at is we are looking to see, are them what we consider maladaptive behaviors, the behaviors that are going to get them in a lot of trouble, acting out, withdrawing to the point that they shut everyone else out? Are those under control? We'll start with that. The second thing we're going to look at right behind that is, do they have a voice to let their wants and their needs to be known? And if they don't have an actual spoken voice, what is the technique that they're going to be able to use to be able to communicate to pretty much anybody who doesn't know them a pretty good sense of what that's going to be? Because if you don't have some way for them to communicate, then the maladaptive behaviors almost always follow. They have to use that way of being able to get their needs met, just as a child, a very young child would. We also look for a level of self-sufficiency and self-advocacy so that they can let other people know what they need. And so if they have a sensory problem, for instance, let's say they're what we call sensory defensive. They go into, and if the rooms are very loud and very echoey, they can let somebody know that they need to go into a quieter space. Do they have the capability of letting people know that? Because if they don't, then you're going to see some of the behaviors that are people have concerns about sometimes and that they wouldn't find acceptable. And then only after we get some of those other things taken care of do we start worrying about things like academic. Can they read? Can they write? Those kind of things. It's helpful from a social perspective for them to be able to do those things at some level similar to their peers. Because if they can, then they're going to be accepted better and they're not going to have as much of the other social ramifications that come up for a lot of our kids that are harder for them to navigate.
So ABA, as the name implies, is it focuses on behavioral element of autism.
Right.
So it doesn't necessarily address, you know, learning or the educational aspect?
No, actually, that's incorrect. One of the downsides, the reasons why I think a lot of people don't understand ABA a lot, and it's not been accepted particularly well, is the fact that it seems like it should be all for, you know, kids that are acting up or having a rough time. But really, when it's talking about behavior, it's talking about behavior of any of us, including me, you, and everyone else, you know, interacting. You don't have to have inappropriate or maladaptive behaviors for ABA to work. In fact, how I was able to transition into developmental work as quickly was because of the fact I was doing basically ABA principles on, you know, and working in the corporate world, you know, doing that kind of coaching and consulting and
in things. Communications.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in communications. Mm-hmm. And so really, it's about it's talking about behavior. Anything we talk about, anything that if a dead man can do it, it's not behavior, but everything else is. And so things like learning is absolutely a behavior. Mm-hmm. And things like throwing a ball back and forth is a behavior. And ABA is appropriate to address all of those. And so it just is a very small subset of the science is targeted on autism. Mm-hmm. It just happens to be the one that a lot of people are aware of right now because it's being so effective with those particular people.
I ask because I have read articles concerned about ABA therapy saying that, actually read a testimony from a parent saying, I think my child has PTSD from ABA. They were frustrated. We weren't seeing improvement, and I think it caused more harm. Mm-hmm. Is there kind of a continuing look at it, ways to improve it, or going on?
I think that's an excellent, and I'm glad you brought that up. ABA is a science, and so what that means is, you know, science is about continual improvement, and you have hypotheses, you try things, you use experiments, you disprove them, you prove them, things like that. And in the early days of ABA, of working with things, you know, like when it started out in the 60s and 70s and things like that, it was a new science. Mm-hmm. And so they didn't have a lot of information on how to use it with humans and things like that. And so there was a lot of early work that was done that was not done as correctly. It wasn't done with the wealth of knowledge that is done underneath it. I would also say that even the stuff that is the ABA that was being practiced, that was used, that was a lot of the early foundational journals of why they knew that ABA would be useful for this population and for developmental folks with developmental delays and things like that, that actually was much more, they would do a lot of the work at the table. They would do a lot more intense work. And I will say there still are practitioners who work like that. Mm-hmm. It is not what is considered the gold standard of the way our population should be dealt with now, okay? And so one of the key things is to make sure that, and I tell this to parents all the time, is that they need to make sure that they're really working with people who know what they're doing. And the way that you know that is you go on to the BACB.com website, which stands for Behavior Analysis Certification Board, and you make sure that the programs that you're working with are being supervised by certified trainers, because just as ABA can be extremely effective at providing very positive results, it can be just as effective at providing very negative results. And there is very definitely the possibility of putting in behaviors. If you've got a practitioner that is not highly skilled, that doesn't understand how you train up the behaviors, and you slide in, you know, use something, we use a technique in some cases called errorless teaching. Mm-hmm. And what that means is just at the moment before the child is ready to make that mistake, you slide in a very reinforcing, very fun, very exciting way for the kiddo, if that's something that works for them, the correct prompt, you know, the correct response. If you slide that in incorrectly, or you do it in a way that's not reinforcing and not fun, it's hard on this child, because we're talking about hundreds to thousands of trials over a course of 6 months to a year or something like that. Mm-hmm. Can you imagine if there was somebody who was less experienced than that and nobody was supervising to make sure that they were doing the techniques correct? That can cause problems.
Which is why you will also do training for parents, right?
Absolutely. Yeah, because we've also seen that one of the things that is one of the more frightening things is that people read on the web or wherever that ABA is useful for children with autism. And so then they will go and attend a one-day workshop on ABA, or they will say, I've gone to a week-long workshop on ABA and I do ABA, you know. And the scary thing is unfortunately, is that, like I said, you can do some serious damage if you don't know what you're doing.
Well, how have you been able to measure success at LifeSong? I know it opened in 2012. Mm-hmm. You had had a center before that.
Yeah, we had a small center up in Newburgh, and then we ended up opening in 2012 LifeSong. Mm-hmm. And so what's been really exciting as far as measuring success, I can show you lots of charts and graphs and how the kids have all improved on incremental things, but most important to me is the ones where, you know, I was doing a tour with a prospective parent this morning, and her son is in a situation where he doesn't speak, hasn't spoken. He's 7 years old. And, you know, it's one of those situations where, you know, the way he's described, you know, I haven't had a blessing of meeting him yet, but, you know, the way they were talking about it is that, you know, he probably isn't aware when most people walk in the room. I've had many kids like that. You walk in there, you know, you put them in the same room with you, and you could beat a bass drum, and they have no idea that you're there. And they can't communicate with you to even tell you to stop beating the drum because it's driving them crazy, you know. And so, and we've had a number of kids that fell into that kind of category. And, you know, just a few years later now, you know, they're also the ones that are running around our center having a great time interacting with their friends, you know, and they're either communicating, some of them by spoken word, some of them by PEC, some of them by sign, you know, some of them on the iPad. Depends on what the particular thing is. And that's how we're measuring it.
What about LifeSong itself? How many children have been able to enroll in regular school?
You know, I don't have that count for you. Exactly. I mean, going because we've never tracked it that way. Mm-hmm. What I can tell you is right now we have that may be useful. We have quite a few kids right now that when we used to start at the very beginning, in a lot of centers, like in some of the larger cities, they really are focused on 30 and 40 hour programs, which means that a child is in therapy for 30 to 40 hours a week. Now, I think because of our unique way of looking at it, because I live it at home as well as professionally, I'm actually not interested if we can get a child out in the community part of the time, like in a more traditional environment or typical environment, and they can be successful, and it's not going to cause them to go backwards, which sometimes it can if they're not quite ready. I'm more interested in having like part-time programs where they're with us to get their intense work part of the time, and then they're over in the school, you know, district, you know, to do some of their other training that is helpful, because we can't simulate a natural environment as much as we've done with our building and all that. We can't make it like it is over in a big school, you know. And our whole job is to get rid of the need for us on a continual basis and just come in for what I call booster shots, you know, come in for social skills training or, you know, things like that when the kids need it. That's ideal.
Uh-huh. Great. Well, thank you for coming on the program, for telling us your story.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it very much.
That was me talking with Kim Dirk, the CEO of LifeSong Academy. It's a school she started in 2012 when she realized autism services were limited here in the tri-state. We'll have photos of the school and more information posted on the Trends page at WNIN.org. I'll be speaking with my colleague John Gibson on the next segment, but first, just a quick break.
Make sure to stay tuned for the last segment of today's program. Integrative Music Therapy in Evansville has recently introduced a new way for autistic patients to say what they're really thinking.
I am every education teacher's nightmare. I can't express myself to anyone. I want to let them know that I am in here and want to be respected for the thinking person that I am.
That's ahead on the trend today, but also we will hear even more of what they have to say next week. We're going to show you live on the trend next Friday something that conventional wisdom says is not possible. Next week, a severely autistic child will take your phone-in questions and answer them on air during the trend. You don't want to miss that.
Host John Gibson met with Lori Schmidt at Culver Elementary to discuss how the public school system, EVSC, is looking at autism and bringing kids with the disorder into the classroom. And to be clear, children with autism can be fully functioning, even sometimes brilliant learners. Good afternoon, John.
Good afternoon. Well, yes, Lori Schmidt, she is the autism specialist. That's her title at the Evansville Vanderburgh School Corporation. And I spoke to her this week, and she told me that ABA, which we've been talking about, the Applied Behavioral Analysis, is the primary method used in EVSE schools. But she told me that, no two kids are alike.
What we do is we look through and find as many research-based interventions as we can possibly put into a school. Many times they're modified for school environment. So say we're doing a component of ABA called discrete trial, where you teach a specific kind of task, say. And we're not getting through to the child that way. We'll find another way to do it. That's one of our major goals, is to leave no stone unturned. If there is a task the child needs to learn, an academic task, a self-care task, a functional task, we'll find a way to do it. Now, it's not just limited to ABA. We use visual supports as very, very strong evidence that always using visual supports for our students with autism. We use components of an intervention called TEACH, which was developed in North Carolina. Mm-hmm. It's a systematic way of teaching kids with developmental delays or autism. So we have eclectic classrooms. They are not just ABA, but there's always that component in them.
Yeah, yeah. Now, you've been doing this a number of years. Mm-hmm. What sort of changes have you seen over the years when it comes to maybe the number of cases of autism and how you go about helping these kids?
Well, certainly we've seen a huge increase in the number of kids. I think we're better at identifying it and quicker to jump in and intervene, right? So that's been our biggest, well, that was the reason they created the position of autism specialist several years ago. I'm actually an occupational therapist by training. Another thing we've seen is the identification of kind of alternative ways to work with the kid. For example, we have sensory diets built into the children's day because we know that kids with autism have certain sensory needs that are individual to them, but they're going to be more extreme maybe than just your regular ed kid. So we have Minds in Motion in our schools. We have sensory-based interventions. You didn't see a lot of that 10 years ago, right? We're much more sensitive to the individual need of the child and try to build in whatever supports they need.
At this point, what do you see needs to be done? Looking to the future, what would you like to see maybe added on to or refined as far as treating autism?
Well, you know, for all of us, school, community, home, just continuing to stay up on the research, make sure that whatever we're doing for the kids, we really intervene as early as possible. So that means early identification, right? Because the kids, if you intervene very intensely early on, you'll see good outcomes. Mm-hmm. There is, you know, I am relentlessly optimistic about students with autism. We have very, very bright kids who are really, really interesting. And I think our schools do a good job of including the kids and really focusing on their strengths and doing strength-based programming. So I want that always to continue.
That's autism specialist Lori Schmidt at the Evansville-Vanderburgh School Corporation. She says the number of students with autism has risen dramatically in recent years, but she says that's because medical and school officials are better at detecting it. She also says, Cass, that the goal is to prepare all of them for the future in the least restrictive environment possible.
Sounds like they're not taking a one-size-fits-all approach.
No. I mean, the applied behavioral analysis, yes, that's the primary. Mm-hmm. But they're looking at all kinds of alternatives and, again, stressing that no two kids are alike.
Yeah. Well, thanks, John. Mm-hmm. Coming up, we'll take another look at a different therapy that's being offered in Evansville. First, a quick break.
Support comes in part from Raven Tire and Auto Service, a proud sponsor of WNIN programming. Raven offers a selection of tire brands, including Michelin and Goodyear, along with complete auto service and recommended maintenance by trained technicians. Information on the web at raventire.com. Stay tuned for the final segment of today's trend on autism spectrum disorder. We'll go back to Cass Harrington in the studio in just a moment. Stay tuned.
Reached the final segment of today's program on autism, but don't forget, this conversation continues next week. Coming up, I visited Integrative Music Therapy here in Evansville. It's a clinic that has just recently introduced a new method of helping autistic clients communicate. Here's Casey DePriest. She's the owner of Integrative Music Therapy, and embedded in our conversation, you'll hear from her client, Josh. I'm here with Casey DePriest. She's the owner of Integrative Music Therapy and the founder of Optimal Rhythms, which is a new nonprofit for those who can't afford music therapy. Casey, tell us about your practice and why you founded Optimal Rhythms.
Well, Integrative Music Therapy has actually been around since 2007. Mm-hmm. I've been in private practice since 2002, but Integrative Music Therapy is our private practice where we provide neurologic music therapy for individuals with developmental disabilities. We are a Indiana Medicaid waiver provider through IMT, but there are still so many individuals that have been added to the wait list, but they just can't access services yet. Mm-hmm. So we wanted to find additional funding streams so that those individuals could access services earlier. The sad thing about the waiver program is that because of the wait list, people don't get services as early as they need them. And children,
sometimes as long as 10 years.
Yes. Some of our children have waited, you know, at least 10 years. And that's providing they got put on the wait list, you know, as an mm-hmm. infant. We might get them at 10 or 11. But if they didn't get on the wait list until they were 3 or 4 or 5, you know, they're well into their adolescent years before they can receive our services. And
for the listeners, you know, to understand, you know, effective treatment of autism, it's crucial to get them while they're young.
Right.
Why is that?
Well, there are a number of studies that show us that early intervention is really key. And through First Steps in Indiana, people can access speech therapy services and occupational therapy services and physical therapy services in some situations and developmental therapy. But music therapy has not been a part of that. And we believe that music therapy services are as important or as crucial to the development of a child, of some children. And we would like to have, you know, that service be available as well. Music therapy is unique in that it can address multiple domain areas within one session. So, we may work on communication. We may work on attention. We may work on academics if the child's ready for that. We may work on fine motor and gross motor kind of all at the same time because the child is very engaged in the musical process. Their brain is stimulated in multiple different ways because of music. There's a lot of research about that as well. And it's just very engaging. So oftentimes they can be motivated to do things that are otherwise really difficult for them in other settings. But within that music therapy session, they're motivated to keep working and to do repetitious exercises and things like that, which strengthen them, you know, intellectually or physically or emotionally, whatever it is that we're working on.
So it's kind of a learnt therapy. I mean, when they're young and then they're treated, you know, they kind of learn behaviors or train their brain a different way. What's going on there?
Well, music therapy is really naturally developmentally supportive because music is so much a part of all of our lives as children, typically. So it's kind of an easy bridge, you know, to move a child who has developmental disabilities of some sort. You know, so many children with autism develop musically, you know, to higher degrees than some other neurotypical children. Mm-hmm. But they just tend to really respond to the structure of music, to the sensory input that they can receive from music or from rhythm or from vibrations. And so, again, that's another way that they engage very easily in our form of therapy.
Hmm. Wow. So what about, I mean, there is this perception that music therapy is this hippy-dippy alternative type of medicine or healing, but there is research and you have testimonies of clients who have been able to overcome or outgrow some symptoms of autism with this practice.
Right. And specifically with individuals who have severe autism and who are nonverbal or non-reliably verbal, as we like to say, we have had some very significant outcomes. And we have some families that are really pretty excited about that because they have found that their children who they once thought or were told were mentally retarded or had very low cognitive ability, we actually have been able to discover that they are indeed cognitively intact.
And sometimes brilliant.
And sometimes brilliant, yes. And through the neurologic approach, we actually are looking at the connectivity issues of the brain and how music can support new neuro connections that actually can help their brain be more connected to their body. Mm-hmm. So many children with autism have stereotypic movements and have movement differences that may not look the same in every child, but kind of every child that has severe autism has some sort of movement differences. And so we've been really looking at that research. There are a group of us, neurologic music therapists across the country, that are kind of on the forefront of of delving into this and, mm-hmm. and realizing that through certain applications of music, we can impact their brain, which then therefore impacts their movement. And by normalizing or regulating their movement, as well as their emotion through music and through rhythm, we can make them much more functional within their own bodies.
Waking up your shoulders, waking up your shoulders.
17-year-old Josh is sitting in a chair while Casey taps and shakes on different parts of his body. Autism disrupts the connection between the mind and awareness of the body, so Josh has to focus very hard on the body part that Casey is percussing, so that eventually he can speak to us.
Waking up your body. Waking up your arms.
All right, I'm going to give you a choice. Which arm do you want first? Which arm do you want first? Choose one. Choose one. Which one?
Waking up your right arm. Think about your arm. We're connecting your body to your brain. Waking up your arm.
There you go. Back. Oh. To your right. Think about your arm. Josh, think about your arm. There it is. Take a deep breath if you need to. Okay, I need you to switch from this voice into your body. I'm getting stuck. It's one of the things we really work on is working through being stuck in our voice, our vocalizations, being stuck in certain movement patterns. You probably notice a motor pattern happening with his hand, and that's what some people refer to as a stem, and it's something that he's just developed a very, very strong motor pattern from doing that so much, and it's really hard for him to stop. Sometimes it's helpful for him, but sometimes it's really a distraction for him as well.
Waking up this arm. There we go. Thank you for switching. Waking up your arm. Waking up your arm. And your hand.
What does a session look like, or even success, however small or big that might be?
Well, it looks a little different from each client that we're working with, because every client is individual. Mm-hmm. Just like any other therapy, you know, we do an assessment process and we determine what goals that particular client needs to work on. But again, for clients that have significant communication deficits or communication difficulties and very dysregulated bodies, we are finding that through cross midline drumming exercises and by applying rhythm within their environment, when they are doing functional tasks, they are able to organize their bodies better.
Right now, Josh is seated, and Casey is standing with a paddle drum in each hand. Josh has to hit each drum across his body, sort of like hitting mitts as a boxing warm-up. He hits the drums first with his hands, and later, Casey tells him to stomp his feet, but he struggles to lift them off the floor.
For instance, they may improve their gait. They may be able to start and stop more easily, which sometimes is very difficult. The whole initiation in being able to, you know, stop their bodies once they get moving, sometimes that's very difficult for these kids. But again, within the structure of music therapy, oftentimes they can do that much, much better. And the more practice that they get, the more their brain learns to acclimate to those things and become just better able to control their bodies. The other thing that we are having a lot of success with is a process called supported typing.
And typing, like, yes, with a keyboard.
Like with a keyboard. These individuals, as I mentioned, you know, we're finding that they are intellectually competent, but they have no way of expressing that. And so they're very misunderstood in their schools. They're very misunderstood sometimes with their physicians. Sometimes they're oftentimes very misunderstood at home with their parents or their siblings because they cannot communicate what they know. But through a process that has been developed over time, actually out of Syracuse University, it is a process in which a facilitator actually provides support to the person to stabilize their hand so that they can type what it is that they're thinking. Now, let's just change gears a minute, since it sounds like you have something you want to say. Are you ready to tell us? All right, so I'm going to use a process called supported typing to support him using his body to use his other voice to tell you what he has to say. All right, get back in your body. Ready? I'm going to shut down this voice to move into this voice. Okay, ready? Go. What do you want to say? Strong finger. Ready?
Hi.
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 All right. Come on back to the chair. I know you have something else to say.
I'm so curious. This is amazing.
All right. Bring your body back to the chair. Nice job. Okay. Let's use better posture, please. So he's correcting. He put too many A's.
Okay. Josh has an iPad laying flat on the table. It's covered in a bright orange protective case, and the program they're using looks like a blank document with a keyboard. It costs about $29, which is an unbelievably low price considering what's about to happen. Casey supports Josh's hand by placing hers firmly under Josh's wrist. Josh extends his pointer finger and slowly begins to tap, letter by letter, on the screen. And about 5 minutes later, this is what he says to me.
Want you to finish?
I am very glad you want to talk to me about the new school.
Well, thank you. Thanks for talking and sharing your story. We have a lot of people who are listening to you, to your story.
We have just been amazed at the success of this, and some of our students have actually been able to demonstrate for their schools that they are indeed in these bodies that don't look like they're functioning, but these minds are indeed functioning. And it's very, very exciting.
Like what are they typing?
Well, for instance, we have a student by the name of Josh, who we have some information out about him because his family has been very happy to share his success. He was actually able to go to his own individualized education plan meeting, his IEP meeting at school, and communicate for the first time to his team that he wanted to be out of special education and into regular classes. He specifically was able to ask for biology, psychology, math, and history classes. And, so we've been working with the school to try to help support them and learning how to work with him within the school district to allow him access to an education.
How frustrating it must be to be in a special ed class, but to have the capacity to perform in biology, but because of motor limitation, you're in that special class.
Yes, it's extremely frustrating, and it's heartbreaking, honestly, when you hear these kids describe what that has been like. Mm. And, you know, for Josh to be 17 years old and to just now be getting a voice in which he can communicate these things is, it's mind-blowing, but it also, you know, really takes you back. It's a process for families, you know, to realize that this student, this child that you thought you knew and you thought you were doing everything you possibly could for them, really has much more capability and now has a chance for a real future and a real opportunity to contribute to our community and to society. We have a number of families. Just yesterday, actually, one of our clients who is 60 years old found his voice during a music therapy session for the very first time. And his parents happened to be there. Normally his parents don't come with him. Normally his respite staff comes with him. But for some reason, his parents were there with him at the session. And so they got to actually experience that and ask him questions for the first time in his entire life.
60.
He is the age of 60. Yes.
What did he say?
We ask him in the session, you know, what do you want to tell your... He talked about his Easter experience and what kind of eggs the children found at the Easter egg hunt and things like that. But then we ask him, what do you want to tell your parents? And he said, tell them I'm talking. And then we said, what do you want to tell your mom? And he said, teach me to cook. And we said, what do you want to learn to cook? Chicken casserole, which he spelled absolutely correctly. Wow. You know, and nobody knew that he could spell. Uh-huh. Nobody knew he could read. But then when asked, you know, what do you want your dad to know? He said, ask him to believe in me. So these kids really want to be believed in. They, you know, they have convinced us at our practice and through Optimal Rhythms, this is something that we will definitely uphold, is the importance of assuming competence.
And that's what makes you unique.
Absolutely.
Not every program is, in, as you say, assuming competence. How, explain that. I don't.
Yeah. You know, I think sometimes people think that they are assuming competence. They're expecting, you know, the child to make progress. I think, you know, for myself, early in my music therapy practice, I thought I was. I really did. I thought I was, you know, expecting appropriate outcomes. You know, I was working towards reasonable, you know, I had reasonable expectations for the clients. But it was all from this this understanding of autism, that it is a cognitive disability, that it is a communicative disability, that it is a social disability, you know, and all those things are wrapped up into that. And now that I understand that it's not behavioral, you know, that autism really is a movement disorder. It really is related to the connectivity issues of the brain that keep these individuals from being able to respond with their bodies in a way that they would want to. Sometimes I think from what they've said, you know, they don't even realize sometimes what their bodies are doing because they're so disconnected from mm-hmm. their bodies. They describe that they can't even feel their bodies. And sometimes the flapping behaviors or the jumping behaviors that we see in autism are their attempt to try to feel their feet or feel their hands to prepare for some task that they're being asked to do, which is really fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
There's a book out called The Reason I Jump, which I highly recommend because it's a kind of a quick read, but it's a really great way of understanding a person who is competent, an autistic who is competent but stuck in a body that just isn't working for them, and mm-hmm. the ways that they learn to manage that and to try to get through each day.
Is this your life work?
It is. It's interesting. I remember back in high school when I was just first learning about music therapy, I had the opportunity just to, you know, do some babysitting and things with children with autism. And I remember one day telling my mom, you know, someday I think I would like to have a child with autism. And I remember the horror on my mom's face, you know, like, why would you wish for that? I don't understand that. And at the time, you know, I really thought that that's what I saw for my future. And, you know, of course I was young and silly and in high school, but at the same time, I knew that, that there was a special passion inside of me for children with autism. And now looking back, you know, I don't have a child with autism of my own, but I have a whole clinic full of children with autism, that I, you know, probably wouldn't have the opportunity to work with if I had a child with autism of my own. So, you know, God has a way of working things out the way they're supposed to be. And I am very passionate about this work and do feel like it's my life work.
Well, thanks for talking with me.
You're welcome. Thank you so much.
That was Casey DePriest and her client Josh at Integrative Music Therapy. I visited them this week at the practice, and we are going to air some more sound next week. I came back to the station with just a microphone full of amazing conversations and sound that I just wanted to share. And as you've heard with autism, no two cases are the same. They are as diverse as the individuals themselves. So I wanted to play more than just one story on the air. So next week you will hear from a few kids at Integrative Music Therapy, and we're going to bring one in the studio. We got Steve Berger. He just opened up his microphone. But yeah, we're going to try and make some magic happen.
Well, Cass brought the audio back from the school and told me what was on there. And there's a picture that I think we tweeted relating to one of the messages that they wrote out. And we put our heads together and we said, what could we do with this? Because we have such good information and we can actually hope to shed some light on a very misunderstood human condition that many people are aware of, but not almost no one understands. There's no cure. There's no cause. really even known for why the autism spectrum disorder actually occurs in individuals. So what can we do about that? And when I saw, or when I heard rather, that Cass, that they could actually answer questions, I said, well, what if we let folks ask them questions? So next Friday, on the air, live on the air on The Trend, we are going to ask for listener questions so that you know that we're not stacking this, that you can call in and ask a question. And these folks, or one of the students that's coming in, and I'm not sure which one it is.
Well, we haven't narrowed him down yet, but I will tell you this will be one of the first times he's ever spoken, certainly on the radio. So it's just a really amazing opportunity, and I'm looking forward to just hearing what kind of ideas we can share with the community, because what I found from recording, I spoke with three boys, and each of them in their own way is an advocate for their cause. They were all very open to my questions. They want to dispel any stereotypes about autism. One boy, Nate, he said, my body does the opposite of what I want to do. He's so bad, he wanted to sit and answer my questions. And at one point we took a group photo and he couldn't sit still. And it was what was going on, not necessarily his behavior. It was he had no control of his body. And so these little slices of brilliance would just play on their iPads, as you just heard. And so that's something that we think deserves another hour of radio.
And again, to be clear, we will ask for your questions. Call in, ask the question. They cannot answer immediately. It takes a few minutes, but we will ask the question. They will answer it, and we'll play it back through their iPad back to you on the air. It's going to be amazing, amazing radio. And we're looking forward to it. And thank you for bringing that to us. Even as an experienced old news person that I am, when you tell me that someone is 60 years old and for the first time can communicate with his parents and tell them what is really in his heart, that even gets me a little misty-eyed. I had not heard that one. So you snuck that in on me. But we'll look for more next week.
All right. We're going to take a quick break here and wrap things up. But don't forget, we're continuing this next week. Put it on your calendars.
Don't forget, the WNIN auction starts next Monday on WNIN Public Television. You can watch, bid, and buy on Channel 9 from 6 to 10 p.m. Central Time each evening. And one of those nights, you may even see some of us folks from the radio doing the auctioneering. We're looking forward to that. But the WNIN auction, annual auction, starts next Monday on WNIN Public Television, 6 to 10 p.m. Don't miss it.
We've reached the end of today's conversation about autism, but we're picking up where we left off next week. As we've heard today, many patients struggle to express what they may be thinking or feeling. So what you see or hear may undermine their intellect and even brilliance. We're going to talk with some more kids at Integrative Music Therapy next week to hear how they're advocating for their widely misrepresented disorder using what they call their real voices, the ones being tapped into an iPad. More information is available on the Trends page at WNIN.org. I'm your host, Cass Harrington. Thanks for listening. The Trend is a production of WNIN in collaboration with the Evansville Courier and Press. This episode was produced by myself with help from John Gibson. Steve Berger engineered today's program, and the theme music was written by the talented Jeffrey Osman. I'm Cass Harrington. This is WNIN-FM Evansville, Henderson, and Owensboro.